You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Every way we can, that means maintaining strong security, investing in our security services. It means being very vigilant.
The president's public schedule for Sunday was empty, and the White House has yet offered no explanation as to why the president did not join the other world leaders at the French rally.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
Hey, Linda. Have you been working out?
I've been shopping at Rite Aid.
Huh?
Yeah, it's Happy You Year at Rite Aid. You can earn all these great rewards just by shopping. I got dance fitness sessions.
Rewards for shopping. Happy Me Year.
It's Happy You Year at Rite Aid. Earn rewards from bowling to exercise classes to vacations for every $50 you spend on participating products with your Wellness Plus card. Now through January 24th. Certain restrictions apply. Value and types of rewards will vary. See riteaid.com/youyear for details.
Hi, how in the world are you anyway? I'm Andy Willoughby from ilikehowilook.com. I have found something that could help you lose 10 to 15 pounds in the next 30 days without starving yourself or exercising to exhaustion. Just go to ilikehowilook.com and watch the short video. ilikehowilook.com uses hydrolyzed collagen protein to help you lose weight and tone up. So watch the video at ilikehowilook.com and maybe soon you'll be saying, I like how I look.
France deployed thousands of troops at Jewish schools in an unprecedented security boost today after last week's deadly attacks in Paris. AP correspondent Lori Heinet reports.
The Interior Ministry said 4,700 security forces are going to be assigned specifically to protect France's 700 Jewish schools. It was a kosher supermarket that was among the sites attacked last week, and a Jewish school was attacked in a 2012 assault in southern France.
Congressman Michael McCaul, chair of the Homeland Security Committee on CBS's Face the Nation, says the Paris attacks highlight the threat posed by Westerners who join extremist groups fighting overseas.
These individuals were actually on a no-fly list and still traveled to Yemen and back. We had the woman, the female terrorist, leave and go to Syria, and yet she's on a no-fly list. So I think Europe has to strengthen and tighten its travel restrictions.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
New internet technology is making it possible for almost anyone to earn money working part-time from home. I'm Andy Willoughby with the 3-Step Plan Home Business System. If you have a computer and can send out email, our new internet marketing system could have you building your own home business and earning money in 2 days or less. Go to 3stepusa.com. That's 3stepusa.com or call 800-480-2102. 800-480-2102.
The news is sponsored by Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc.
Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they'll live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their own terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. They are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within your reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton, Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you achieve your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. That's 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Ameriprise Financial Services, Incorporated, member FINRA and SIPC.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterton at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterton, the voice for mental health in Hunterton County. And the weather today is periods of rain with a high near 35. It's calm winds. Chance of precipitation is 90%. New precipitation amounts of less than a tenth of an inch is possible. And tonight, there's a chance of rain before 9 p.m., then a slight chance of snow and sleet between 9 and midnight. It'll be mostly cloudy with a low around 23, north wind 6 to 13 miles per hour, chance of precipitation is 40%, and little or no snow and sleet accumulation expected. Tuesday, mostly sunny with a high near 29, north winds around 10 miles an hour. Tuesday night, it'll be partly cloudy with a low around 12, north winds around 8 miles per hour. Welcome. You're listening to Mental Health Matters, and my name is Larry Cartwright. I'm your host, and NAMI is this hour, compliments of the Hunterton County Chamber of Commerce. And for those of you that don't know, NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and there is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. What we try to do is we try to help people, families who may have someone in their family with a mental health issue, or someone who has a mental health issue and is trying to go on with their life. We are all volunteers here. We work out of our houses and all that. We don't have an office. But you can reach us from anywhere, and even out of state if you want. We can direct you. It's 908-284-0500. That's 908-284-0500. And today we are very privileged to have with us, and I'll introduce the ladies first. We have with us two special guests that I'm very pleased to have with us. Jerry May Grimes is the board chairman of the Hunterton Youth Services, and Lawrence Brooks is the executive director of the Hunterton Youth Services. Welcome both of you to come. I appreciate you being here.
Thanks for having us, Larry.
Thank you, Larry.
I thought I knew just about all the services and what have you in the area and in the state. And I was shocked when I met you, Lawrence, and found about Hunterton Youth Services. Either one of you, it doesn't matter. Would you explain what it is?
Well, I'll take the lead on this one, Lawrence. Well, we actually started in 1979, over by the shelter on Route 12.
Okay.
And in 2002, we purchased a home. And what we do is we bring in young men that come to us from challenged home environments. Perhaps they can't function in those environments, or their families can't accommodate the needs that they have difficulties with. So whether it be academically, mentally, emotionally, they come to us through the state, and we help them through a number of different vehicles with life skills and things of that nature, and vocational rehabilitation.
Okay. Whose idea was it to start this? If it's been around that long, if somebody had to come up with the idea and say, let's, do this.
Well, I actually think when it originally started, there was legislation that was in place that every county had to have a shelter. Mm-hmm. And so originally, Hunterton Youth Services really was a shelter environment for both boys and girls, strictly right. serving kids in Hunterton County. And then as the times changed, the board and staff at Hunterton Youth Services just became aware of the evolving need and recognized that there was an additional need for more of a longer-term group care kind of environment that we're able to provide in a home-like environment rather than a shelter, because obviously the intent of a shelter is a much more short-term stay, so a couple of days, whereas the boys in our program tend to be with us on average about 9 months, so between 9 months and a year usually.
Okay. That sounds like almost a school year, you know, from...
It is. I'm not saying that's
what it's geared on, but it sounds like it is, you know.
Well, it's not directly geared on the school year, obviously, but I will say that, you know, academics is a very important part of what we do. Mm-hmm. And most of the kids that come into us have obviously fallen behind academically. And as I'm sure many people can relate to, it's one of the things that when you have so many other things going on in your life, the last thing you want to focus in on is school. So one of the things we sort of pride ourselves in is our ability to help these kids usually at least catch up to the grade level and certainly improve their academic standing. And we've been very fortunate with the school district here. They've been wonderful community partners in supporting our program and our kids in that way.
Good. I want to come back to that in a minute because I have some questions about that. But I got to ask, what is the role of the board?
Well, board members are really comprised of community volunteers, people that want to, you know, invest in the future of the youth that come to us that are so challenged. And the board just are really people that want to give their time to make meaningful change in the lives of these young men.
Do they oversee what's transpired or what?
Well,
do they in suggest new ways of doing things or, you know?
We certainly aren't professional you know, youth care workers, or we don't really have necessarily a background in child welfare. We do oversee the fiscally responsible of the organization. We do implement programs that there might be a need. We oversee our executive director, but typically our executive director is the person that really runs the daily operation of the house.
Mm-hmm.
So we really defer to him as to his recommendations and things of that nature. But we really do look, we look to establishing policies, procedures, and bylaws and things of that nature, but not of the daily operation.
And I would also say, Larry, you know that our board, we had a retreat several months ago, and we developed a strategic plan as a result of that, which obviously the board was very involved in.
Right.
So we actually have several committees in place that the board is involved in. So not only the financial part that Jerry talked about, but also looking at programmatic issues. So we have a program committee. We have a facility committee because, as you can imagine, having 12 teenage boys in a home, it takes a toll on a building. So really looking at what we do in that arena and, of course, being a nonprofit, fundraising and looking at how do we engage the community both from a fundraising perspective but also in terms of engaging volunteers.
And I believe the board also has really strategically done a great job this year for increasing our awareness and outreach. As you know, Larry, you've been in this county for quite some time, and you have not heard of our organization much about it. So I think that's one of our greatest initiatives this past year and the coming years is to increase that awareness component.
Yeah, I think so, because like I said, it's, you know, I'm very familiar with a lot of the other organizations, or most of them, I would think, you know, 99% of them. But I was like shocked when I met you, Lawrence, and you know, it's, you know, like, whoa, what? I didn't hear about this. I don't know about this, you know.
Well, I think the mindset years ago was the previous leadership didn't feel that they wanted the boys, they wanted to have the community know where the boys were. The mindset is different years ago with challenged youth. Today, I think we find that the community is willing to help youth that don't come in such fortunate circumstances.
Right.
So I think the climate has definitely changed, and that's probably where we're going towards that direction.
Right, and that wouldn't be a bad thing at all. You know,
absolutely.
It really wouldn't. Now, I've got to ask, you had an open house not too long ago, prior to Christmas, and I attended, and I was going to ask then, but I figured now I'll wait and see when you come on. I'll ask you on the radio.
Great.
No, it's just something that crossed my mind, and I think. Now, you said there was how many youth in that house?
We have capacity for 12. Right now we have 11.
Okay. But the night of the open house, there was like only five or six that were there.
So we had half of them upstairs in the room that you were in, and the other half were downstairs doing the same activity that was being led by two of our board members and some of the volunteers that were downstairs. So we were just trying to break up the space.
Okay.
Because obviously if we had the 12 boys in the room, we felt like they would feel a little overwhelmed with having so many guests all trying to be in a contained space.
That answers my question because I'm thinking.
So you saw half.
Okay. Yeah, I saw half. And the half I saw were getting all these presents. And I'm thinking, and I saw these other young men going up and down the stairs. And I'm saying, well, wait a minute. You know, are they bad and they got sent out of the room or what? You know, so I you know, I wanted to ask, but I figured it wasn't a good time, so I didn't, you know, at that point, I figured I'd ask you today. Because it crossed my mind last night, I'm saying, gee, you know. And so I wanted to find out how many you capacity for and how many you actually have, you know.
Well, a very good observation, Larry.
Yeah.
Well, I happened to be the one downstairs, Larry, too. So I can tell you.
So you know they were having a good time when they were down there with Jerry, right?
But, you know, if I can ask, if you could be, you know, I don't say totally specific, but what type of youth do you serve? You know, are they youth that are in trouble with the law? Are they, you know, drop out of school? What have you? I mean, I you know, there's other obvious choices, but I just, you know, just curious, what type do you serve?
So about half of our boys come to us through what most people would think of as the traditional foster care system. So these are kids that have been, you know, abused, abandoned, neglected, and have fairly limited family involvement. So that's about half of the boys that we serve. The other half of the boys that we serve really are community kids. So they have a family, and usually siblings and all of those kinds of things that you would think of, but their behaviors have gotten beyond what the family can control.
Deal with.
So they come to us that way. Some of our kids do have involvement with juvenile justice system. It's a fairly small percentage, maybe about 20% of our kids have involvement with corrections in some way,
right.
But some definitely do. And sort of when you think about it, Larry, you know, we're sort of that medium step in what I sort of think of as the continuum of care for kids who are out of home, so away from their families. And so at the deep end, you know, you'd have like a locked residential program. Then you would have more of a group home structured environment, which is what we are. And then certainly you might have foster care or foster homes
right.
in the community, and as well as kids who are at home with their families with in-home services in place. So we sort of fall in the middle of that continuum. And what we have probably the greatest success with is kids who have gone through that sort of deep-end locked residential and are working their way back down into involvement in the community and hopefully a return to their families of origin when it's appropriate.
Right. Do a lot of the youth who you serve have families who don't want them there or can't deal with it or whatever the case may be?
I think we have a little bit of both, would you say, Lawrence? We certainly do have some families that get involved, but for the most part, the family is not as present as we would like them to be. And just I wanted to expand on what Lawrence was saying. We also serve a lot of children outside of Hunterdon County. So, you know, many people think because of our name that Hunterdon Youth Services that we predominantly just serve Hunterdon County. But quite frankly, we do serve many more children outside of Hunterdon County throughout the whole state of New Jersey.
Well, that's awesome.
Yes, it is great.
Now, when you say you serve them outside of the county throughout the state, is this the only home that you have? Is the one here in Flemington?
This is currently the only residence we do have
to
serve the boys all throughout New Jersey. So we serve children from Essex County, Camden County that come to us. So,
do you work through the county organizations there or?
We work through the state. Lawrence, you can.
So the case management organizations make referrals to us for kids that are appropriate.
Okay.
And, you know, not being from the New Jersey system originally, I will say one of the things that I think is very nice about the system here is that, you know, the kids, and if there are families, and usually there is some level of family involvement, they come and they actually interview us as we're interviewing them, which is really, you know, a nice thing that they have choices and can make choices that fit their needs and their family needs. And I will say, you know, the Flemington community, most people really resonate towards this, and it's really helped to make our program a program of choice for kids and their families because they realize this is a very different environment than being, you know, in an inner city kind of group home setting.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing because the quote-unquote wealth of Hunterdon County, I know when dealing with mental illness, people, what, you have mental illness in Hunterdon County? Duh, yeah. You know, right. When you stop and think that on the average is 1 in 4 people are affected by it, worldwide population, you would think that a percentage of that is going to be in Hunterdon County, you know. And the same thing with, you know, homeless children or children who are, you know, maybe don't walk the straight line and have gotten off path and, you know, and the families can't deal with it or don't want to deal with it or don't know how to deal with it, which is what we find a lot of times. It's that they're, you know, the individual may have fallen off the wagon 3, 4, 5 times with either drugs or alcohol, and the parents and family just want to wash their hands of it. They're tired of dealing with it. Or they don't understand why they keep falling off the wagon. And, you know, they can't grasp it. You know, why don't you get yourself together, quit feeling sorry for yourself, et cetera, et cetera. You
know, it's not sure that easy.
Yeah, you know, and we find that a lot with NAMI, you know, and I'm sure that you do also, I would think.
Yes, certainly, you know, and I think, you know, it sort of is that the two extremes sometimes, you know, so you have the one side of the family that is totally burnt out because they have faced the challenges over and over again, and they just want to break. And, you know, at least at the starting point when they come to us is, you know, no contact, we don't want to be involved, and hopefully you move them away from that.
Right.
And, but then at the other end of the continuum, sometimes you have people who are so enabling. So they're enabling, and they're doing it out of love, which we know, but enabling the behaviors to continue because of the way they're interacting with the young person.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, we do have licensed clinicians on staff, and one of the big focuses that we've really emphasized over the last 6 months is our family engagement and family involvement. Because at the end of the day, most of these kids are going to go back to their families. And, you know, if we haven't done something to intervene there, then, you know, all the great work that's been made in the program is for naught. So
now, do any of the youth that you serve have mental disabilities or physical disabilities that sort of, I don't want to say allow them to act out, but they use that to act out?
Yes. So I would say we have a couple of things.
I don't know if I said that properly but
you know. We know what you meant.
Anyway. There you go. Thank you.
We know what you mean.
Yeah. So sometimes I stutter over my words, you know. But.
So, you know, one of the big things that we've seen is we've seen some kids with attachment issues.
Okay.
Because, you know, one of the things that we've learned over the last, you know, 10 or 15 years is that kids who don't attach by the age of 2 or 3 with somebody have a hard time developing attachments and relationships for the rest of their life.
Exactly.
So we definitely have some kids that fall into that category. And then we do have some kids who are on the autism spectrum that we work with. And we also have some that have some borderline developmental disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, as you know from your work with NAMI, some of the serious mental illnesses really start showing themselves in the late teens and early 20s.
Right.
And so certainly we have some kids that exhibit some of those kinds of behaviors as well.
Sure.
But I will say, you know, by and large, the majority of our kids are not kids that are fortunately not kids that are going to necessarily have lifelong mental health challenges. Mm-hmm. But we definitely have some that will face that with their lives.
Yeah. Okay. And maybe it's my old age, but how do you know, like, all right, I know that through various organizations you get candidates. How do you, I don't pick is a bad word, but how do you prove a candidate for your program as opposed to not approving this one, but approving this one?
Well, there's a set of criteria that we have as an organization, and obviously through the case management representative, they also give us their outline and their history as to what maybe their challenges might be. So based on our criteria, whether we have the facilities or the staff that accommodate those challenges, that obviously is what determines. And then the interview process, as Lawrence mentioned earlier, is also part of the process itself.
Yeah, and you know, Larry, I think I think a couple things that we look at is obviously we look at the history.
Right.
So we look at, for example, if it's a child who has a history of violence, How extreme were those violent episodes, and when's the last time that it occurred? You know, somebody who was assaultive, let's just say with their parent 2 years ago, is very different to me than somebody who was assaultive 2 weeks ago, right, with their parent. And, you know, we also try to be very careful about some of the more extreme kind of indicators. So kids who have a history of sexual violence towards others would be something that we would probably pretty much red flag, and they'd really you'd really have to prove to us there had been enough intervention that we wouldn't have to be as concerned about that. Same thing with like fire setting. Yes. So some of those, right, sort of extreme behaviors tend to be things that, you know, we certainly give a second and third review of before we would accept a young man with that kind of history.
It's so unfortunate that there are so many like that, though.
Yes.
You know, we have to be mindful, too, that the children we do bring in, how they will affect the rest of the children in the house. So
right,
that's a very big concern for us. I mean, we've tried it both ways, and it's tough to strike that balance once in a while. It all could go perfect, and then when the equation comes together, it doesn't always work out, and sometimes it works out even better than expected. So,
Do you find that when you have, like you said, 11
yes,
currently, do you find that they intermingle, that... Or some don't get along with others, and they stay away from each other.
I think just that you'll find it in a typical household.
Well, yeah, siblings, obviously, you know, but I was just curious with this situation if it's the same or, you know.
Yes, they definitely sort of group off into, right, subgroups is what we find. Mm-hmm. So you find three or four of them that are really close with each other and mm-hmm. want very little to do with the others and vice versa. And so one of the things that we really try to do is to have more of the larger group activities as well, so that they have to interact with each,
right,
other.
Right.
And then there are also times when we break them into groups so that they are mingling with somebody who's outside of their normal group that they would naturally, okay, gravitate to. And part of that is, you know, because when they leave us, they will be thrown in other settings where all of us have to interact with people we don't necessarily care for, yeah, on a daily basis. And, you know, you have to be able to cope with that.
Right.
So, you know, we certainly challenge them on some of that. But by and large, you know, on the day-to-day, when they can pick and choose, they definitely hang with their three or four buds.
Well, yeah, but that would be normal,
right,
you know, yeah, for anybody,
yeah,
you know. I mean, somebody that comes from a loving, caring family, they do that, you know. They have X amount of friends or people that they
well, it's what you have in common
to,
with, right?
You know,
I mean,
exactly,
so it's, you know, some of the kids are into sports and some of them would rather watch, you know, a movie, you,
right,
know.
And some of them would rather, right, play a game or whatever the case may be, you know. Could you describe a typical day for a resident? Like, okay, you get up at 8 o'clock or whatever the case may be, and then what happens?
Lawrence is,
you
know, probably more well-versed with that. He lives there with that.
Yes, well, there are no typical days, unfortunately. But if I was going to go through a typical day, especially during the school year, it usually is a pretty early wake-up because the bus is there fairly early to come,
yeah,
and get them.
They're mostly all high school,
yes,
kids anyway.
Yes, almost all of them,
yeah, right,
go to high school.
Right.
Right. So it's in the morning, it's getting up, having breakfast. We usually don't have chores or anything like that in the morning because really, mm-hmm, it is getting them out and on the bus.
Right.
So most of them spend the day at school. And again, thank you to the public school system for your support.
Do they all go to the same high school?
No, or? They don't.
Okay.
So that is.
And how is that determined?
So one of our staff members, and in addition to his other hats that he plays for us, is also our educational coordinator.
Okay.
So he works with the school district as well as the referring district where the youth is coming from. And
okay,
they make a determination about what's the most appropriate school for this,
okay,
young man.
Right.
And I will say, you know, a lot of times the kids themselves have a pretty strong opinion about what they want to attend school as well, if they know something about,
mm-hmm,
the district. So that's how that determination usually gets made. Then when they come back from school, the very first thing is snack. And let me tell you, they make sure we do not forget snack.
I would imagine.
But, you know, when you're a teenage boy, it tends to be food is important to you, and I certainly can appreciate that. And then after snack time, we have a little bit of quiet time where you're focused on your homework and getting some,
mm-hmm,
of those things accomplished. And after that, we certainly have chore time because the kids are responsible for helping with cooking and cleaning. They do their own laundry.
Right.
So these are all part of the life skills that we teach,
mm-hmm,
them as well. And then usually most days we'll do some sort of group. It may not be a therapeutic group, although we do those a couple of times a week as well. It may be more of a psychoeducational kind of group,
okay,
or a learning skill group. And then they do get a little bit of free time. And I will say most of them, if the weather permitting, like to be outside. And one of their favorite activities is to go to the Y, which has also been a great community partner for us as well. And then we also have individual therapy that the kids receive. So depending upon whether it's their night for individual therapy, they would get that, as well as possibly family therapy. And then by the time it's all said and done, it's time for bed.
Right. That's interesting. We have to take a quick break. You're listening to Mental Health Matters, and we have Hunterdon Youth Services, Lawrence Brook, who's the executive director, and Jerry May Grimes, who's the board chairman. And we appreciate you're here, and we'll be right back in just a few moments.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisal, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof, and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rab Coins has been for numismatists since 1974. Founder and owner, Randy Block, an expert numismatist, has been an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
Hi, this is Ruth Ann Disatel, celebrant officiant with Celebration of a Lifetime. When people ask me why I joined the Chamber, it's because I want to get to know you and what you're all about. And I want you to get to know me and what I'm all about. And together, I'd like to celebrate what we can do for Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is a Forward New Jersey Coalition member.
London Bridge is falling down, falling down, falling down. London Bridge is falling down.
In August 2007, the I-35 bridge in Minneapolis collapsed, killing 13 people and injuring 145, including little children trapped on a school bus. The bridge had been rated structurally deficient, but those warnings were ignored.
Build it up with iron and steel, iron and steel.
In New Jersey, there are 479 bridges carrying over 8 million vehicles a day, rated worse.
Iron and steel will bend and bow, bend and bow, bend.
These aren't just bridges waiting to be fixed. They're tragedies waiting to happen. On June 30th, the state's transportation fund will be empty. We need to replenish it now, because next time, it could be your family on that bridge. Go to ForwardNewJersey.com and find out how you can help. Paid for by Forward New Jersey.
Are you tired of the limitations of your small office shredder? Do you need to be compliant with federal regulations regarding the disposal of sensitive information? Are you concerned about identity theft? If so, then call AssureShred. AssureShred will provide your company customized on-site document destruction service that fulfills regulatory requirements and at the same time protects your organization from the consequences of the improper disposal of sensitive information. To obtain a free quote or to schedule an appointment, call AssureShred at 877-466-1566 today. That's 877-466-1566.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and we have Hunterdon Youth Services with us today. Lawrence Brooks, who's the executive director, and Jerry May Grimes, who's the board chairman. And we've been talking about what Hunterdon Youth Services does, who they serve, what is atypical, that's my word, not theirs, day at the youth services. And I know you talked about family, but is there, say, of the residents you have there now, is there any family dynamics related to the residents, and you know that.
Unfortunately, yes, Larry, there are. That does come into a play of the boys that we do receive. Their families just are not equipped, whether the boys are challenged or not. They just don't have the means or the ability to take care of these young men. Mm-hmm. So, you know, unfortunately, we do have to deal with that and encourage family, you know, interaction and engagement. But ultimately, at the end of the day, we're you know, mandated to have our children go back to their families of origin. Right. So we do try to encourage that engagement process as much as possible. But yes, unfortunately, because of the family circumstances, not being the child's fault, they do come to us because of those situations.
And, you know, as I'm sure you can relate through your great work with NAMI, you know, the bottom line is we have the whole continuum of, yes. of families. So, you know, we have white-collar families, and we have families who are very engaged and would come to anything we ask them to, and then you have other families that you can't even get to return a phone call.
Right.
And, you know, we certainly have parents who are incarcerated that the kids mm-hmm. have almost no contact with. We have kids who've been adopted. Right. So, it's every piece of the puzzle that you can think of that we have with our kids.
Well, this just crossed my mind as we were talking here just now, but if you have a youth that serves 9, 10 months, whatever it is that, you know, is your program, and he has no family, okay, either they passed away or they're incarcerated or whatever the case may be, what happens to him?
Well,
or her, you know, him, basically.
Well, we have had actually a couple of situations where we have had to keep the young man for more than 9 months. Actually, there was a young resident that we had for about 3 years. Mm. And he had family, but his family was incapable of taking care of him. We did actually have another young man also that had no family at all. So
yeah.
We do run into situations like that, and we certainly will keep them as long as the state feels that this is the best place for them. Ultimately, you know, they do make the decision as to where for case management representative also.
Well, and I will say, too, that ties into one of the dreams I think that our board has, Larry,
yes,
which is independent living and transitional living.
Right.
So that is what happens to most of those kids, is that they go on to either a transitional living program or an independent living program that hopefully really prepares them for what it really means to be an adult. You know, we really try to equip our boys as best we can with the academic success and vocational success and all of those kinds of things, because, you know, the things that all of us take for granted in terms of life skills, these kids don't have.
Right.
So we do the best we can to equip them, but the bottom line is at 18, they are not ready to be out there
on
alone.
Their own.
They're
right.
just not. And, you know, I equate that to myself. 100 years ago, I wasn't ready at 18 to be out on my own, and I came from a wonderful family.
Yes.
So I think it's just imperative that we recognize you know, what the needs are of these kids, mm-hmm. and that we are continuing to support them. But a real dream for our board would be to be able to expand our services and be able to offer independent and transitional living.
Yeah.
That would be a really terrific dream for us to accomplish, because we feel that these boys that age out of the system, so to speak, really have nowhere to go. A lot of them end up going back to their own habits, their own neighborhoods, and really all our work that we've done for them is lost.
Lost,
and,
right.
You know, some of them become incarcerated. Some of them end up having to go to the military. And the military, it doesn't always take them because of whatever their issues might be. Some of them will stay in hotels for as long as they can. And, you know, again, they just fall into the wrong group or the wrong neighborhood.
Right.
And we see transitional living being a way for us to help these boys also create better life successes.
Sure, absolutely. Do you have them do any community affairs or community projects or?
It's funny you say that. I'm as a parent, I always felt that doing community service was a great way. It's good for your soul, you know, to have these kids also give back to the community. It's always been so supportive of them. And yes, we have done some community projects. Actually, in the fall, we just did. We helped Bishop's Market with their community service, their community day. We also did some things earlier this year with Grow a Row and the food pantry. And I think
Grow a Row is right down the road from where
right.
I live.
Well,
so
there you go.
I know where
you know
it is.
So, you know, it's really terrific for them to get involved and with the community as well. We feel that that's very, very important. And some landscaping initiatives, I think, that they did with City Year. I think they went and they helped cut down some
with the Raritan group. They did some.
Okay.
Yeah, and the Y Camp. They've helped with some of the landscaping there as well.
Well, that's pretty awesome. You know, I think it's needed. You know, absolutely, that they do those things. You know, or you know, at least if they're capable of doing it. You know, some may not be right away, but I think you know that it is a good outlet for them.
Well, and as Jerry said, you know, we want them. You know, certainly the community has been good to us, and we need their community support,
right?
And we appreciate it very much. But we also need the boys to recognize. But you also have to give back, and give back in the way that you can. You know, and it may not be financial, but you can volunteer your time. You can help with projects.
Exactly.
And,
exactly.
You know, and the reality is, most of our boys really love doing it too.
Right.
They
really do.
Right.
And I just want to also add to that, we have a couple of days that some great volunteers in the community, and even Merck, I'd like to also recognize Merck, they do a day of caring. And when they come to our house and they do projects in our house, our boys actually help participate in those programs too.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, it's terrific.
It really is. Would you speak, you know, just briefly about some of the successful discharges you had and some that maybe were not so successful? Just briefly, though.
Sure. So the first thing that comes to my mind, Larry, is that this past school year, we had 6 of our kids who actually graduated high school.
All right.
Which I think...
that's awesome.
Graduating high school is an accomplishment for anybody, but especially for our kids. So everybody that was eligible graduated. So we're really proud of that fact. I would say that some of our more successful discharges is Adam is immediately springing to my mind. He was in our program for quite a while, and I wasn't there at the time that he was actually in the program. But from what I understand, he I think it's fair to say was quite the hellraiser back in his day. But he's really turned around his life. He's now working towards being a state trooper and is in the Marine Corps. And he spoke at our last comedy night and really just did a fantastic job. He's also volunteered some of his time to come in and talk to some of our boys and try to mentor them. And for the boys, you know, it really helps them to understand, you know, here's somebody who went through what I went through and made it to the other side. Because it's one thing for me to sit there and talk to them, and it's something else for somebody who's really lived it.
Because they sit there and say, well, that's nice. I mean, I like you and everything, but, you know, you didn't live to live and walk to walk and talk to talk. You
exactly
know?
Right.
I have a, I consider her a friend. She's a psychologist and psychoanalyst, and she suffers from major depression, and she has a clientele. And I always tell her, she's written books and everything, and I always tell her that, you know, Dr. Deb, you have been there. So when you're talking to a client, they can't just say, well, you don't know, because you do know. You've been hospitalized for depression. You have depression yet, you know, and you've lived it and you've walked the walk and you can talk the talk, you know, and I think it's awesome for somebody like that to come back and talk to the young folks there, because they get the idea that, well, look, he did it, you know, and he was probably worse off than me. If he can do it, why can't I, you know, something like that. And I think it's pretty awesome. Yeah.
He's also provided a lot of inspiration for us that serve these youth.
Well, yeah.
And that we are making a difference, and we can't maybe perhaps make an impact on every young man that comes to us. But certainly when you have great stories like this, it's, you know, supports what we're doing. We're doing the right thing.
Exactly. And that's the way I feel like with NAMI. I mean, we can't solve everybody's problem.
Right.
You know, I mean, I wish I could, you know. Somebody asked me one time at a meeting, at a presentation, what is my biggest wish? And I says that I wouldn't have to give these presentations, you know, and that they find a cure for mental illness and I wouldn't have to, you know, do any of this. But until that happens, and it's not happened in my lifetime, you know, we do what we have to do to try to help people. And that's what you're doing. And I think it's awesome. You know,
thank you.
What happens to the unsuccessful ones? And I hope there's not that many.
Well, so, you know, we do occasionally have one that we are not successful with. And, you know, I will say I think that the board and the staff and everybody really tries to go above and beyond so that we can keep kids whenever it's possible. The one that's immediately springing to my mind that we recently were not successful with. You know, he was a young man who came to us older than most of our boys come to us. So okay. He was already 18, getting ready to turn 19. And he had been in and out of foster care the vast majority of his life, and more in foster care than out of foster care. When he turned 18, he had actually made the decision to not take advantage of transitional or independent living or any of those kinds of things, went out of state to live with his parent, and basically it became a violent situation in the home instigated by the parent. And he left there, went to live with his two older brothers, who got into a knife fight with each other, and he became homeless. And so the case management agency called us and, you know, said, would you take this young man? And we did. And at the end of the day, Larry, he just didn't have the skill set to work in a structured mm-hmm. environment. And I know it broke all of our hearts, because Jerry in particular, along with another one of our board members, had really gone out of their way to a community business that had lined up a job for him. I mean, so we had really put some things in play. But, you know, when you come from that level of violence and you've experienced constant disruption throughout your life, he just wasn't able to be successful. And again, as Jerry said earlier in our conversation, you know, one of the things we have to be so mindful of is, you know, that's a kid that it broke our hearts to say this isn't working. But at the same time, we had to worry about the outcome for the rest of the kids in the program.
For the other kids, right. Absolutely. Sure. So. Absolutely. And I understand that perfectly. And, you know, it's a shame that you can't help everyone. But you can't, you know, and no matter what you do, sometimes it, you know, it's just not there yet, you know. Maybe you hopefully down the road that something comes about that, you know, will alter his.
You hope you plant a few seeds, if nothing else, right there.
Right, exactly, exactly. What do you have your volunteers do?
Well,
and do you need volunteers?
Well, that's kind of a rhetorical question.
Well, yeah, but I figured I'll let you lead right into it.
Okay,
there.
Thank you. We can always use volunteers, and in many different capacities. You know, if people would like to learn more about our organization and how they can volunteer, the best way would be probably to call us.
What's the phone number?
The phone number is 908-782-0868. And or they can attend our volunteer orientation, which we hold every month. And I think we have one going for January 21st.
January
17th. And February
21st.
And March 21st. So we do have an orientation program that it's for a few hours. The potential volunteers will have an opportunity to meet the boys, take a tour of the facility, meet the staff, and also see what would be the best way they see themselves to volunteer with us. And they could do it a number of different ways. We can do it with an event-driven volunteer program, like we can do it if they want to help with the comedy night, the golf outing that we're having in May, or the comedy night in October. They can also do...
We actually consider you an event-driven volunteer at this point, since
absolutely,
you came to our open house, Larry. So the event-driven volunteers really are the people who come in maybe once or twice a year,
right?
Have very limited interaction with the kids in the program, but support us in some way. And then we also have what we call more scheduled volunteers.
Right.
So these are volunteers who... we know every Monday they're going to come in and help right. answer the phones or stuff envelopes. Or,
mm-hmm.
And we actually have a retired school psychologist who is starting to volunteer with us. So she's going to help co-facilitate a group every week.
That's cool.
With our
yeah.
kids.
That's good.
And we do require that group of volunteers does go through the orientation
yes.
That Jerry was describing. And obviously they're supervised by our staff. And then our real dream is to have what we call the mentor volunteers.
Yes.
So almost like when you think of Big Brothers, Big Sisters kinds of programs,
mm-hmm.
So that we would be able to background screen those volunteers and have them work one-on-one directly with an identified youth.
And that's a goal you have for that,
yes.
right?
That's
at
right.
this point.
That is the highest tier of volunteerism that we have. But in so many ways that you can just come and even call our facility, schedule a tour, just come over and meet some of the boys and the staff at random. If the volunteer orientation dates don't work for you, we encourage the community to come and take a look at what we do.
What do you have coming on in May?
We have a golf outing in May at Stanton Ridge Country Club.
I do not play golf. Never played golf.
It's funny you say that. My husband doesn't either, but he says miniature, and I'm heck on those windmills. You know?
Yeah, I can do miniature. Yeah, you know, once a year maybe down a shore miniature, but other than that, you know.
Exactly. But it is May 11th at Stanton Ridge Country Club. It's a private course, so it's a premium course that many people wouldn't be able to play if they didn't get involved with a fundraising event like this. And I believe it's about $200 a golfer, which includes golf with a cart and lunch and dinner. So it's a good value for the day for a golfer. I mean, you know, you and I might not appreciate that.
My father-in-law used to try to get me to go with him. I go, what are you, crazy? Sit there with a bat, you know. Give me a bat and ball. I play baseball, you know. But
it's going to be a great event. It's actually our first event for our golf outing. So we hope to get a lot of great community participation. And again, there's many different ways that you can support our day. As you don't have to golf, Larry.
I wouldn't even think about it. Why don't you give that phone number again in case anybody wants to reach out and,
Our phone number is 908-782-0868. Again, 908-782-0868, Hunter and Youth Services.
I got to ask, how were you funded? Solely by donations or...
I wish. No, we're not. The majority of our funding comes in through Medicaid funding.
Okay.
So it's through the state, and obviously it's a drawdown partially through the federal government. So we get paid a daily rate for the kids that we have in the program.
Right.
And then we also are able to take part of, like, in the school nutrition program. So that helps to provide some funding for the food that's provided to the kids. So between those two things, that probably accounts for about 80 to 85% of our funding, and then the rest of it is through fundraising and grants.
Okay. Now, you're doing a fundraiser with the golf, right? Is there any other that you do?
We actually, last year was our second annual comedy night in October, and we did extremely well. This October 10th will be at Hunter and Hills Playhouse. It's a wonderful, I'm sure you've been there, Larry.
Oh, yeah.
It's a terrific facility. Wonderful people there that have been very supportive of our organization.
It's in my township. I live in Union Township.
Well, there you go. That's right. There you go. But it's a really fun-filled evening. We have two or three comedians. And last year, I'm proud to say that we increased our attendance by 100%. We had 100 people in 2013. And last year, we had 200 attendees.
Wow. Awesome.
And I will tell you, I'm so fortunate and pleased to live in this county where business owners have been so supportive with our silent auction and, doing advertising and just supporting at so many levels. The people.
Lawrence going to be one of the comedians on there?
You hope not.
He might be a good MC. Larry, we're going to actually have you come and be our MC this year. Would you like to do that? We'll buy you dinner, Larry.
There's no such thing as a free dinner, right, Larry?
No. Okay. What is your future vision for Hunter and Youth Services?
So, you know, as we think about our future, we really try to think of expanding our services so that not only do we have the group home that we currently have, but that we also have more of the front-end prevention services so that hopefully kids won't need the kinds of care that we provide. Right. And then also, as we talked about before, the transitional living and aftercare, so the follow-up after they've completed our services. So that's one of the key things that we've really focused on with our board is, you know, how do we look at adding services at the front end and the back end so that we really are able to provide the whole spectrum for these kids.
Absolutely. We feel that also, too, preventative measures will be more effective, you know, for, you know, kids that are coming in and also help for kids as they leave us. So we want to, with the trends of healthcare today, we want to just be able to encompass and embody all those challenges.
Yeah. And, you know, have you ever looked at what female?
We have.
You know, is it, I don't know if you've done any study. I mean, because there's a relationship, more males than females or vice versa.
Well, I'll let Lawrence take care of the clinical side, but I can tell you, based on the history of our organization, we did have adolescent boys and girls. But as you know, adolescents, I don't need to say cohabitating both youth. It just tough. Really was yeah, not yeah. something that worked. Right. So I believe that very early on when we purchased the home in 2002, we had to make a decision mm-hmm. to go one gender or another.
And it made sense. It, you know, it does.
But when it originated back in the shelter for that interim right. period of time, I think because it was a short period of time, it was very manageable. And I think as the stays got longer, that yeah. as they're living in the same residence, it's very difficult. And, you know, there's a lot of hormones going on. And
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So as far as Lawrence goes, I mean, he could explain as far as the clinical component of integrating, you know, that.
Well, I'm not even sure I have to go into the clinical component. She explained it just fine. But I will say, Larry, you know, that's definitely part of our vision is, you know, we do want to yes. serve both boys and girls. Right. So as we look at the other services that we're adding and partnering with other community providers, yes. Providing services to girls is absolutely within our vision of what we want to do.
Yeah, because, you know, one day a week I work at the hospital in emergency services where they actually pay me. I volunteer one day, but then one day they pay me. And real quickly, because I want to, we got two more minutes. But you see a lot of young girls, and I'm saying young, 14 and up.
Yes.
And they're using drugs and alcohol or cutting themselves yeah. and all, you know, and it's just like, and then you, like I talk to the parents and some of them, it's like talking to the wall, mm-hmm. you know, or I get more answers from the wall, you know, but, and you figure this kid is going to go home there and he's only going to be back again. And you see it. It's like a revolving door. They go in and out, in and out. And so I think that, you know, down the road, I'm not saying, you know, tomorrow, but down the road.
We certainly would like to be able to do that.
Exactly.
We feel there's a great need
exactly.
for the female, you know, the youth today. And, you know, that is a challenge. And you've said it yourself that no matter what you do, they end up going back to their family of origin.
Right.
So, you know, there are challenges beyond just them staying there with us mm-hmm. and giving them all
absolutely.
The tools and the skills
absolutely.
That they have to learn to cope outside of the environment that we provide for
right.
them. So we understand the need, and thank you, Larry, for saying so. I appreciate that.
In the last minute, is there anything you'd like to sum up? I'm putting you on the spot here.
Well, I just want to also really recognize some of our really generous community partners, 100 and Chamber being one of them. They've been a great vehicle for us to open the doors of many businesses that we probably would not have been able to. So the Chamber has been terrific in that respect. Hunter and Helpline has also been yeah. very, very supportive of our services and expanding that scope for us.
Right, right.
And, you know, some businesses here, Unity Bank has
okay.
been excellent for us, and Roman Jewelers in particular. And there's also been, you know, many other local establishments that have been very supportive of our initiative.
Well, I have to definitely say thank you to Evans Worldwide because they have sponsored not only our comedy night, but also they're our lead sponsor for our golf tournament. So thank you to them.
And, you know, they're outside of Hunterdon County, so we just
yeah.
want to thank them.
Well, you've been listening to Mental Health Matters, and unfortunately the time flew by and we have to leave. So remember, folks, mental health does matter. And my wife, Friday will be our anniversary, and I won't forget. So see you next week. You've been listening to Mental Health Matters and Hunterdon Youth Services. And one real quick, the phone number.
908-782-0868.
Thank you so much, both of you, for coming. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Larry.
This is USA Radio News. I'm Bob Kellogg. Heavy criticism aimed at President Obama. More than a million people marched in solidarity in Paris yesterday against terrorism. In addition to French President François Hollande, other world leaders in attendance included German Chancellor Angela Merkel, British Prime Minister David Cameron, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and even Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas. But neither President Obama nor any high-level leader from his administration participated. Fox News analyst retired Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters on Fox News reported he was ashamed of the president.
How could Obama do this? Not only not go himself, but forbid our other top officials from going. I mean, there is simply no excuse for it. I'm at a point in life where I'm hard to shock. I was shocked. I was stunned by this.
The White House has continued to avoid calling last week's attacks an act of Islamic terror. You're listening to USA Radio News.
What if I told you that you could reverse diabetes and stop taking your diabetes medication?
If you or someone you care about has diabetes or prediabetes, there's a special free video you need to watch. You may have heard about this. It's all over the internet. Diabetic99.com. People who have followed this plan at Diabetic99.com have not only normalized their blood sugar, but have stopped taking their diabetes meds completely with their doctor's approval. Diabetic99.com is a natural, drug-free approach to reversing diabetes with remarkable results in as little as 4 weeks. Diabetic99.com will save you from being a slave to doctor-prescribed drugs. It's easy. Diabetic99.com gives you three specific actions to get your blood sugar under control. And the best part is the main ingredient and solution is a common spice found in most kitchens. Watch the free video for yourself at Diabetic99.com. Watch for free at Diabetic99.com. Get back the quality of your life and free yourself from diabetes medication. Go to Diabetic99.com.
The New York City Police Department is on high alert, that following the re-release of a propaganda video from ISIS urging